Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman. Well, there's been a great debate that has arisen. Conventional wisdom has come to believe that our consumption, and many would argue overconsumption, of meat is killing the planet. Recently, the hotel for startup businesses, WeWork, has announced that they no longer will serve meat to their 6,000 employees, nor reimburse them if they eat meat, well, I should say eat anything that's red meat, pork, or poultry. WeWork founder, or co-founder, Miguel McKevy, stated in his email to his employees that WeWork can save an estimated 16.7 billion gallons of water, 445.1 million pounds of CO2 emissions, and over 15 million animals by 2023 by eliminating meat at our events. Well, to me, this is very interesting. And for many of our listeners, this will be interesting. Our current shortcuts in meat production and conventional agriculture have effectively changed conventional wisdom to a point where our young progressives who think that they're doing the right thing are instead caught up in a bit of a falsehood, which they are based on symptoms and not the root cause of the problem. Our current management practice of confined animals stuffed with antibiotics and eating engineered corn and soy, which are steeped in glyphosate and other detrimental synthetics, have been accepted as a given. Somehow, banning meat, or all meats with no differentiation of production or management approach, is for corporations now the same as banning plastic straws? It's to me, just very interesting. As we've talked about in past conversations, books like Defending Beef and How Cows Can Save the Planet go deep into the statistics that animals aren't the problem. In fact, 120 years ago, we had more than 20 million additional animals on our lands than we do now on open pasture or in confined units themselves. And up until we milk the values out of our system, these animals lived in a symbiotic relationship with natural order. So in fact, many of our podcast guests that we've had on Sourcing Matters, like Alan Savory, Bill Nyman, Fred Kirschman, William Ferreira from Common Land, would argue that we in fact need more animals on pasture, as they are the conduit to systems approach that will sequester more carbon into the ground on the hoof. So let's not blame the animal, let's blame the management, and work together for deeper understanding. To add additional layer of context to this, well-known bankers and now political and environmental activists Tom Steyer and Kat Taylor have stated, we would continue raising cattle even if no one eats another steak. So how animals became the enemy of the state is such an interesting result of short-sighted perspective and practices to fix these symptoms of the problem, again, not the cause. Now, I personally believe we do need to eat less meat, but better of it. For some, and folks we have on the show today, it's not the meat themselves. They may not eat it. It's for personal beliefs or for the well-being of themselves. But as we're all environmentalists, maybe we should look again at these systems as all trophic levels and how they work together, if properly managed, will work in harmony, even if it's left alone. Knowledge share and lifestyle choices do matter. So let's try to get them right before propagating our ideas. So today, we welcome two gentlemen fighting for systems health and coming at it from an exciting angle. First, an evangelist who seems to have a unique capacity to make great things happen, with the tagline of how the food you eat can reverse climate change, heal your body, and ultimately save our world. His book and film, Kiss the Ground, have been a revolutionary, engaging point for a broader audience into a movement. Today, we welcome Ryland Engelhart. Hey, Ryland, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for having us on this podcast.
Of course. Glad to be here. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. And we welcome also from the Kiss the Ground team, Jesse Smith. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Aaron. Thanks so much for having us on the show.
Yeah, of course. So, Jesse, I'm going to read your background first, then we'll return back to Ryland. So you're a farmer, a designer, a consultant that's focused on the intersection of regenerative supply and enterprise. You have a passion for agriculture and food systems that is rooted for your love of California's diverse ecosystems and influenced by your work and travels through Africa, Europe, and Western United States. Your family, friends, and community are what inspire you to develop a network of farmers, restaurants, and consumers to benefit our soil, water, and air. I'll say, Jesse, that is such an alignment with many of our perspective and many of our guests. I do look forward to talking to you more in depth about what you're doing on farm to bring this forward and get more consumers engaged in these conversations. But I'd like to start actually with Ryland, if we could. So, Ryland, you have a mission. Let me give a little more of your background, if I could. So you are a mission fulfillment officer and co-owner of Cafe Gratitude and Gracias Madre. You're a co-founder of Kiss the Ground, a nonprofit that educates and advocates about the connection between soil, human, and planetary health. And you co-created an award-winning and transformative documentary film, May I Be Frank? Also, you're an entrepreneur and activist, and using your restaurants as a platform to inspire more gratitude into our culture. You speak about the sacred commerce and tools for building community and regeneration. So Ryland, we're going to start at the top level here, because I saw some of the interesting and multidimensional reports and information you've put out, both in writing but also on video. So let's start at the building block of life, a quick crash course, a carbon 101, if you will. So you stated that we have carbon everywhere, right? We've got it's pooled in five locations, the atmosphere, the biosphere, soils, oceans, and fossils in one of your video. And our actions since the Industrial Revolution have swung us out of balance. And in the last decade, we've witnessed a bit of a citizen's awakening for the impact of our emissions. But it's more than just that. It's the practices we use to create our food, our fiber, and our fuel that will ultimately determine if we release carbon in the atmosphere or if we draw down that carbon into the living soil. So my first question for you, Ryland, is this awakening of lifestyle choices, which seems to be the crux of Kiss the Ground, is it something that's transformative and happening? And how are you cultivating that within your community?
Beautiful. Thank you. So just to clarify one thing before sure. I go down a rabbit hole. Kiss the Ground is the nonprofit that I did co-found, and the nonprofit inspired and brought a lot of resources and inspiration to the writing of the Kiss the Ground book, but I'm actually not indeed the author of the book. Josh DeCal, who's a big friend of mine and a filmmaker, was the one that wrote the book, and I'm also the co-producer on the film that will be coming out at the end of this year. Which is also called Kiss the Ground, which are both communicating the mission and the message that through rebuilding healthy soil, humanity has a pathway forward of how we can not only feed our population, but how we can actually rebuild, regenerate, and draw carbon out of the atmosphere, reversing global warming while creating a healthier ecosystem on the land. So just to clarify
you.
That,
yeah,
so
thank you.
People don't think that I'm trying to be the writer or the filmmaker, because I'm not. But so yeah, that clarification, and then the question.
Regarding the lifestyle choices and how that engages consumers into to being part of this this drawdown.
Yeah, so you know, I think to just give it some context, I had a complete life transformational moment in New Zealand about 5.5-6 years ago, and I saw for the first time in my life a way to heal and actually solve problems that I just felt like sustainability. Everything, you know, all approaches to saving the world, saving the planet, all seemed like just doing less harm. I had never really cognitized, really gathered a way that we could actually turn the clocks back until I saw the living system of how soil, plants, trees, and carbon in the atmosphere and how that flow of carbon moves. That I saw the connection and the opportunity that our plate of food could actually be the catalyst that could have all humanity participating in not only nourishing their bellies and their bodies, but also participating in something that seems so much bigger and that any individual can't really have any impact on. And to just having that connection that our food could be the solution to draw enough carbon out of the atmosphere to turn the clocks back, that was the full light of like, wow, this is possible. This is a trajectory. This is this is something real, possible, and I could see it in my heart, and I could see that everyone else could actually feel intuitively the truth of that. And I just, from that moment forward, I said, all right, my life is for being an ambassador, a advocate, a missionary for this idea, to be this idea that the time has come of people understanding the way that carbon sequestration works and that drawdown works. And so I came back to New Zealand from I came back to Los Angeles from New Zealand to my business, which is restaurant business and selling people organic plant-based food. And I started, you know, table to table, ambassadoring this idea and asking people, did they know that, you know, we could pull carbon out of the atmosphere and store it in our soil if we did agriculture in a particular way. And no one knew. No one knew, even in people who are very connected to what are our approaches for climate change. And so I just, from that, I gathered friends in my living room for a year. Every Monday night, we'd gather, you know, filmmakers and musicians and activists, and we'd sit with a whiteboard and figure out how we were going to birth this idea that we knew. It wasn't like we discovered it. We just knew that it was something that pioneering maybe scientists and farmers and indigenous communities, certain places understood this regenerative cycle, and yet it just wasn't part of the collective consciousness. And we knew, all right, we're in Los Angeles. We're in the media capital of the world, the storytelling capital of the world. You know, a lot of bad stories and a lot of, you know, degenerative ideas are being cascaded from Los Angeles. Let's see if we can create a trophic cascade of the story of regeneration. And in turn, we created the soil story, which was one of the videos that you referenced, which was the first piece of media that we created. And we launched that in correspondence with a Jerry Brown, Governor Brown initiative called the Healthy Soils Initiative, and we got about 23,000 signatures along with this video to support the Healthy Soils Initiative, and that was kind of our first coming out to public with this story and creating, hopefully, the aha that I had for lots of other people. So that was the first act of engagement beyond just me being in my restaurant, being an ambassador, and gathering people in my living room and, you know, discussing how we were going to crack the code of having this idea become part of the lexicon of common understanding worldwide.
Fascinating, and I think those click moments, those experiences of putting us or immersing ourselves and getting that technology is so essential. But I think there is a difference here, Rylan, where many people take that and go back to their day-to-day and may not think twice about it. And I appreciate the humble nature of you obviously giving a shout-out to Josh Tickell, who was the author of the book. But he clearly states in the writings of the book that you were without a doubt, in detail, he goes into quite detail, that you were without a doubt the inspiration and effectively the guiding light to moving this in the direction. So I appreciate the clarification. But I wanted our audience to know that you were maybe not the who penned it, but obviously the inspiration was quite there on your shoulders. Jesse, let me ask this, if I could, let's talk about how this takes practical form. Let's talk more broadly about regenerative practices on the farm. So practices like cover crops and crop rotation and no-till and permacrops, compost tea inoculations are all being used on broader scale now as more folks awake to the values of regenerative agriculture. So how do we gain broader adoption for these practices on farm?
So yeah, I mean, I think that there are a few different ways to approach this. And, you know, I think one misconception is that we need to scale some of these practices in order to either feed a population of a country or the population of our planet. more of the scalability of some of these principles and how they apply in specific contexts around the world and within different communities. And so each of the regenerative practices that you spoke to will all take a different form within a different soil structure, within a different community, within a different bioregion. So a lot of this is around education and training of farmers in the principles of regenerative agriculture, understanding what a healthy water cycle looks like, how we can help benefit rebuilding our water tables and our water cycles, as well as really identifying nutrient streams and how we can really value and utilize nutrient streams through different trophic levels. You know, one thing that I really noticed over my experience, you know, limited as it is, I don't want to paint some picture that, you know, I'm a longtime farmer. It's been in my family for generations. Although my grandfather was a farmer, it skipped a generation. And some would say that he was a gentleman farmer. And one thing that, you know, I came to really respect from him is that, you know, he came hat in hand and learned from his peers in his community. And that's something that I have done as well. And you know, one thing that I did learn is that, you know, everyone has their own context in which they work, you know, their own financial situation, their own family situation, their landscape, that all is going to determine how they ultimately manage and steward their resources. And if we start to overlay this set of principles of regenerative agriculture within that context, we start to see that it takes different forms. So, you know, one thing that I'm really looking for on our day-to-day is to allow people to step into this conversation, to step into this movement to transition more landscapes in our country and around the world into a regenerative paradigm. And that means that, you know, we can't ostracize someone for, you know, their conventional practices or, you know, how they, you know, decide to till or what they decide to use to deal with their pests or blights, but giving them the next best step. And in the same way, you know, we also are looking for, you know, our customers and our consumers in the restaurants and the shops that we support to also take their next best step. And I think that's really where we're going to get the scaling factor, is where people are all able to see a better option when they're making their daily decisions. And that sometimes is no harder than just changing the lens in which they look at the world through. And, you know, that was something I was very privileged to have come into contact with in the early years of my engagement with land stewardship. And that was through the lens of permaculture and the permaculture principles and ethics of design really kind of opened my eyes to a world where you can no longer look at agricultural production and the food system the same way. And if you ask continue to ask questions and query at all of the points of intersection between you and your food system, you start to dive down, you know, a rabbit hole, if you will, and if things become more clear. You know, I think that that's a big part of what we're trying to do, is bring clarity to our food system, which I want to be you know, be sure to underline the fact that there's a difference between clarity and simplicity, because, you know, to try to simplify our food system, I believe, is what has gotten us into some of the messes that we're currently trying to work our way out of. And we have to understand that nature inherently is complex. And we're not trying to simplify, we're trying to clarify.
Yeah.
And so clarifying a decision-making process for farmers is something that education and training in the principles of regenerative agriculture really offers. And that's really where, you know, my engagement with Kiss the Ground came to light, was, you know, they came out and did a little expose on our farm a few years back, and 2 or 3 years ago. And through our kind of continued communication, recognized that I was working at the intersection of, you know, developing regional agricultural systems and food service providers in the form of chefs and restaurants and caterers, as well as really trying to engage the consumers to support those providers that were really taking the next step you know, the farmers that were going out on a limb to change their practices, as well as the chefs and the restaurateurs who are going out on a limb to change their sourcing, and giving a clear understanding to the consumer that, you know, choosing this restaurant over the other, or this dish over the other, or this market over the other, was really making a difference within our regional agricultural system, and ultimately benefiting the ecosystem services that we all know and enjoy in clean air and clean water and healthy soils, and ultimately trying to get people more nutritious food closer to home. So, you know, that is really where my focus lies and where I feel that we really need to scale is consumer and practitioner education.
Let me ask this, Jesse, as a follow-up question regarding the engagement of the consumer. And Ryland, feel free to jump in as well if you have additional thoughts on this. But so, Jesse, you run the Kiss the Ground Farmland program, which is a program that connects restaurants and their customers to farmers and the landscapes. They tend through experience in their dining out, and you're servicing the highlighted menu items that that support farmer practices that benefit soil health and represent the potential of regenerative agriculture. So can you tell us about how Kiss the Ground Farmland program works and how you hope to create this deeper connection with the consumer throughout the value chain, through that engagement?
Yeah, I'll speak maybe briefly to it, and then Ryland, you can maybe follow up with your experience. So Kiss the Ground piloted this farmland program last year in collaboration with one of the restaurants that Ryland is owner in, Cafe Gratitude. And they highlighted a menu item that utilized kernza, a perennial grain being developed out of the Land Institute, in one of their flatbread pizzas. And, you know, just like any other pizza on the menu, you know, it was delicious. It had, you know, fresh toppings. It was at an affordable price, but what they did was call out specifically a $2 additional charge with that pizza that went to a scholarship fund for farmer education and soil health metrics and monitoring. And what that did was put the power into the consumer's hands in order to make a choice that they were actively supporting their country's farmers and their country's land in its health. And so what we did was take those funds that were raised through the sale of that menu item over a month and put it into a scholarship fund that did give access to regional farmers to go and learn from some other farmers, you know, and really get a better idea of what is possible for their landscape, what is possible within their region, and what is possible when you start looking at some more climate-appropriate crops. And for those who aren't familiar, kernza is a deep-rooted perennial grain, very similar to wheat. It can be used for breads, beer, whiskey, all sorts of different products that we find in our daily culture. And then we connected it back to that decision saying, you know, by transitioning our support from an annual, you know, small-rooted wheat grass to a deep-rooted perennial, we are reducing the impacts of erosion. We're increasing water infiltration and changing the paradigm by which we look at grain production. And so as we decided to, as Kiss the Ground decided to scale up this program, I was approached in order to take a look at what other crops were out there and what other practices were out there that we could look at supporting. How do we look at more perennial tree crops or more climate-appropriate tree crops that don't require as much water, don't have as many blights or pesticide needs for their production, that don't require synthetic fertilizers, and little hint, most crops actually don't require, but a lot of them inherently have that as part of their best practices in conventional agriculture. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with chefs across the Los Angeles area and moving into other regions in order to create these highlighted menu items and support this farmland program scholarship fund. And then also working with the educators and the trainers in order to give people the ongoing support and network that they need to transition their landscapes and have the sounding board of peers when they do inevitably run up against difficulties in that transition process.
Hmm. And Ryland,
I'll just add a few other things.
Yeah, please.
The promotion was called Eat Pizza, Drink Beer, and Save the Planet. and it was actually, in addition to the Kern's A Crust Pizza, it was also the Patagonia Long Root Ale, which also is made with the Kern's A perennial grain. And it was really inspiring to see a farmer, as Jesse said, from our region, a guy named John Hammond, who from the Tehachapi Grain Project, which their mission and vision is to bring local grains back to the Southern California area, growing rye and different heritage wheats. And I remember we received this beautiful text message from him, just really, for a farmer, really gushing, communicating, like humbly, beautifully moved by what he had learned from this course that we didn't run, but we were in partnership with the Soil Health Academy, and that's run by Gabe Brown, Ray Archuleta, and a couple other gentlemen. And they're just world class trainers in soil building practices and regenerative agriculture. And John Hammond, I think he is a multi-generational farmer, and to just hear him be able to change his mind and be moved and inspired by this new approach and vision of how we could be managing his land was really, really inspiring to have us say, all right, let's try to scale this program up and bring it to more restaurants, more chefs, and have not only the story being cast from Cafe Gratitude, but many restaurants that have that one menu item on the menu that really starts proliferating and having this idea becoming more commonplace in people's minds who are out having a delicious dining experience and are curious and interested about how their food got to their plate and what the impact of that food is. We're very, very excited about the project, and Jesse's been doing an amazing job, and I'm excited about it.
Did you find the empowerment campaigns of these highlighted menu options at Cafe Gratitude to be well received by the consumers? Did you see it be a successful venture, and whether that's financially positive or just retention or positive feedback?
I would say that it was, the food, people enjoyed the product a lot. People loved the pizza. It was well received. I think it, to me, what the feedback was, and the way people perceived it was like, wow, Cafe Gratitude, I love how they just continue to push the envelope and, are going further. It felt like an act of, instead of just hanging out on our laurels, it was an act that consumers who, especially young millennials, are really appreciative of people who are going further and really, there's an idea of don't market yourself, just solve problems. So I think that was, people recognized that aspect of our business was really, okay, we're using our business as a platform to solve problems and think bigger and think how can we make more of a difference. So that was my experience of how people received it. And they loved the flavor-wise, they loved it and they felt good. And I was like, oh, I can have pizza and beer and I can feel really good about myself that I'm doing something good.
Yeah. Well, authenticity yeah. matters, obviously, right? I mean, it has to be. We have to be authentic, and from supply to sourcing. And then, as you said, if you're putting your money where your mouth is, you're dedicated to this. And I think that you probably have a certain level of following of engaged consumers that are there with you. And let me ask this, Ryland, regarding Cafe Gratitude. So in my preamble, and even in Kiss the Ground and many other publications, we've talked about the role of animals as essential in the drawdown and anti-desertification of land. But Cafe Gratitude is a collection of plant-based restaurants specializing in gourmet cuisines. You strive to create a menu and an environment that supports health and sustainability for both the community and the planet. So the question is, are meat eaters and vegetarians, are we able to work together with food animals and help save the planet?
Absolutely. I am so together with me and David Bronner would say, put our fists together and say, bam. We're you know, he's a long-term owner and one of the, he's the CEO of Dr. Bronner's Soap Company, which is another big regenerative, minded inspired organization, but he's a vegan, but he gets the importance and the role the animals play on land. And as do I. I'm mostly a 95% vegetarian, eat mostly plants, didn't eat a hamburger until I was 35, and had one and only hamburger from the cow that we killed on our farm that there was a lot of controversy about. My big message is, let's eat less meat, because the majority, 99.9% of the meat that's on the market that people are eating is degenerative. You know, it's creating a degenerative effect on the planet. So yes, let's eliminate and stop eating that meat. Let's eat as many plant-based meals as we can. And when we can find and discover, and we get more inspired by sourcing matters, and we start to discover who our farmers are and how they relate to their animals and their land, and do they see their animals as part of a restoration plan for their landscape, yes, support those farmers. And if you choose to eat meat and you want to eat meat, then yes, be grateful that you can actually support a farmer who is regenerating the land and is producing really healthy food that can regenerate your body. If you indeed feel like, you know, meat is good for your constitution, good for your health, and you want that to be, that works with your, you know, your own personal health, then I totally empower that.
I think that's exciting that we're all finding harmony and realizing that we all are going to eat. And I think even many of the meat eaters or the meat producers we have out on our side to, absolutely, it's that eat less meat, but better of it. And I think it's an essential step of knowing where that comes from. And Jesse, as you mentioned, and Ryland, what you just spoke to, having that provenance, that backstory, and the integrity behind that is an essential part because of the so many externalities within the current framework of conventional agriculture, whether it's row cropping or if it's with meat production. So let me take us back to 30,000 feet here and talk about Kiss the Ground, the book, and the first few chapters, which were dedicated to COP21, the Paris Climate Agreements, where author Josh Tikal has pretty unique access into some of the advanced political views on climate and our role and responsibility in that. So in the last 18 months, we've seen a pretty vast role reversal on our federal stance on climate emissions and natural resource management, amongst many, many other things. And it appears that it's going to have to be a grassroots, a local, a state, or a free market initiative that will move us in the near horizon. So first question, maybe rhetorical, do we need those rat bastards in D.C.? I don't know if we do, but besides that, how do we keep the base motivated through those grassroots, local, state, and free market initiatives?
I'll take a stab. I think that the grassroots and the people have never been more ripping and roaring and ready to get active because of, that they're clear that our government is not going to take care of the problem or these issues that we're concerned about. And so I think, yeah, it's a ripe climate for activism, for engagement, for grassroots movements, for businesses to, you know, step up. You know, local, obviously, we're here in California. We've been building a great relationship with Gavin Newsom, who we hope will become the new governor here, and getting him inspired about regenerative agriculture. We've done a couple fundraisers for his campaign and really had the focus of the fundraisers about educating him on the potentiality of regenerative agriculture and building soil as it relates to food security and water infiltration or the water holding capacity, you know, which are all very relevant in California in a drought, as well as, you know, California being a leading environmental state and wanting to be on the cutting edge of what we're doing for climate change. And so it's been exciting to have a few opportunities to be with Gavin and see him getting the potential of soil and regeneration as the context for the next phase of the environmental movement, moving beyond sustainability. And so, again, I've listened to many spiritual teachers and great books saying, you know, we passionately take action in the moment with where we are, with the resources and the people around us, and we let go of the results, and we don't look to go, okay, I'm overwhelmed by the whole thing, let me just sit home and watch the Netflix. You know, so it's about taking action where we are and playing full out and not getting defeated or not getting concerned if I don't see it all changing. I just have to know that I'm a little part in a greater movement that will move the needle towards more balance. And so that's at a 30,000 feet. That's kind of my philosophy and my approach in this moment. Jesse, you want to add anything?
Yeah. Jesse, I think on the producer side, too.
Sorry, go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, Jesse, if you would even comment on the producer side, that would be wonderful to understand. Are the producers buying into this mindset as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we see it from many different sides here and many different perspectives, all realizing both out of a desire for self-preservation as well as benefiting the greater whole, that a transition, a shift in paradigm is necessary from our land management practices to our business practices to our financial practices to our interpersonal and relationship practices. And so, you know, one thing that I've really noticed is, you know, farmers want to change, you know, but there's a lot already on a farmer's plate just to keep the farm, to maintain their production, to be able to pay for next year's seeds or for their water bill or with whatever it may be. And there's also a big shift in the private sector where businesses are realizing that their sourcing options are becoming more and more limited. And so they're really trying to shift their viewpoint from offsetting as part of their corporate social responsibility to insetting, to actually invest within their supply system to actually benefit the health and vitality of the functioning ecosystems that support their business. And that's where we're finding this relationship between producer and purchaser. And that's really where we've started to see potential in this kind of direct relationship. And with the emergence of new technology, you know, and distributed ledger technology, we're actually able to have value exchange amongst entities that on a one-to-one basis, we're all of a sudden starting to get to a point where we can pay farmers for a lot of the ecosystem services that have been relegated to the bottom of the list when it comes to externalities. And for many years, the cost of doing business did not ever account for the value of our soil health or our water quality or our air quality or our biodiversity or any of these things. And now, you know, the way of monitoring and the way of valuing is coming to the forefront. And that's where I see so much potential. And back to your original question when you said, do we need, you know, those people in Washington? I would say yes, but I don't think that we're leading with them. They'll follow. And we do need, you know, our governmental body to be able to help undo some of the processes that have been set in forth for, you know, in force for farmer subsidies and subsidizing the wrong things. And so, you know, in time, once we've proved out a lot of these concepts and, you know, we have the science to back it up, which we already do, but we need more, then we will start to shift how our government, how our private sector, and how our farmers all value the ecosystem around us. And I'm very hopeful. You know, I can't not be hopeful. I've got a four-year-old daughter, and, you know, I know that she will be the one that inherits a lot of the decisions that we are making now. So I feel that there's a great generation that is moving things forward right now. And I believe that there's a great generation ahead of us that is also supporting a bunch of young entrepreneurs and land stewards and business owners that are trying to make their way in the world. So yeah, it's a dawning of a new day.
That actually brings my mind and awareness to one of our other programs that we actually just launched 3 days ago, which we're really, really happy and inspired about, and that is a soil story curriculum. It's a week-long curriculum that fits right into public school standard education science in the sixth grade, as I said, and it basically goes right on top of piggybacking onto where photosynthesis is learned, but it goes deeper into how photosynthesis relates to carbon coming out of the air and not only just building the plant and giving oxygen for us to breathe, but also then how some of that carbon goes into the soil and makes the soil healthy and pulls carbon out of the atmosphere and helps reverse global warming and, you know, helps water stay in the soil and makes the nutrient density more available for the food that we eat from that soil. And so it's a really beautiful curriculum. It's free. I think we, in the first 24, 48 hours, there's 400 downloads of the curriculum. And this next year, you know, in the approach of, you know, hopeful, a new generation that really gets it, wanting this to be, you know, in this year, our ability to distribute through, you know, technology, having the ability to distribute this curriculum and get buy-in and participation from schools all over this country and hopefully, you know, even international. But we've built a really beautiful week-long curriculum that has kids really get inspired and take that information and inspiration into a project that they would take outside of their classroom to actually get their hands, you know, connected to it on a more visceral level. So that's another one of the programs that Kiss the Ground is launching and developing this year. So for those that are listening, if you're educators, please check out kisstheground.com, and we'd love to get you our soil story curriculum for your young generation to really understand that it's the life beneath our feet that means so much to all of life.
Yeah, well, great insight to you both, and great work to you both. That's transformative stuff. And I'll include links to Kiss the Ground, and I'll find the information for Soil Story Curriculum so people can access it from the write-up on the webpage itself. And Jesse, is there a location where we could learn more about the Kiss the Ground farm program as well? Is that also on the main website?
Yeah, and it's on the same website under our programs. You can click on the farmland program, and as we have both new restaurants, participating restaurants that get onboarded, will be posting their profiles on the website, as well as the producers, and little short stories about their production, where they are, what they produce, and how they produce it. And our goal, as you actually mentioned earlier, Aaron, which is so important to underline, is about honesty and transparency, and not trying to paint anyone in the light of doing anything perfect or being, the model for anyone to follow, but being very clear as to why we're highlighting their operation, why we're highlighting this product, and why it's contributing in a positive way to our ecosystem and into our healthy soils, and then how we're supporting them in taking the next step forward. And that's why I'm really excited about the power of this program, is because it supports farmers on both ends, both by buying from them as well as providing them with the resources to get better at what they do.
Well, yeah, I'd love to just add one more thing about sourcing, and that is that me and my brother and my dad, who also, my dad is a regenerative, aspiring regenerative farmer in Northern California, Vacaville. He has a farm called Beloved Farm that he does farm tours and farm dinners, and is a really amazing education as well as production site that they're pretty, 21 acres and animals and all different cows, ducks, sheep. We went out and visited this farmer who's kind of a legendary farmer named David Vedder out in Nebraska, in Marquette, Nebraska. And he's been growing organically for, I think, over 50 years. And he's come up with a 9-year rotation of 6 different crops and then 3 different passes with livestock animals. And we, for all the Cafe, inspired by this farmland program, Cafe Gratitude has taken on bringing only David Vedder's corn into our restaurants, our 7 restaurants, Cafe Gratitude, Gratitude, and Gracias Madre. So all of our corn chips, all of our tortillas are all coming from this single source corn from David Vedder's farm, which is, he's been, for the last 10 years, hasn't needed to add any off-farm fertility and is able to continue to regenerate his soil year after year through his unique rotation. And so we're very proud of that corn coming into our supply chain and making a big commitment to have that corn be the only corn we're serving for this next year. So just in a one way that Cafe Gratitude is really taking that sourcing on and putting our money where our mouth is, that's the thing that I've taken on in this first part of this year, was really having that happen. So very excited about that.
That is exciting. Well, I'll say, like Rylan and like Jesse, I am very hopeful. I'm very positive that these principles, these cover crops, these crop rotations, the no-till, the permacrops, the compost, the engagement of animals back on the land and pasture to be part of the sequestering carbon down into a drawdown into our living soils, our living sponges that have so many values that then gets correlated to our food. We have these opportunities to engage these principles. And as like Jesse said, these, like his grandfather, these programs can be learned from communities, from trusted networks. And we're seeing those grassroots movements. And as I said, tongue in cheek with our, do we need DC representation? Well, I agree with your strategy that they will follow. We can lead and they can follow. So these opportunities are squarely in our hands. We have an opportunity to lead, to cast new programs on how we feed ourselves. And to the point of the book of Kiss the Ground, how the food you eat can reverse climate change, heal your body, and ultimately save the world is such truth and ultimately great acumen to live by. So Rylan and Jesse, I can't thank you both enough for partaking in today's conversation. Thanks for the insight and the acumen shared with our listening audience. And we appreciate you. I'll just say until next time, we'll speak soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I'm so inspired by the platform that you've created and the stories that you're telling. And it's been an honor to share our story with you and with your audience. And we look to continue to build the relationship and see how we can support each other.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much, Aaron. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to working my way through more of your podcasts. I saw some familiar names and an amazing list of people that I all respect, and I'm really looking forward to going through and hearing more from them. And you have a great way of hosting a space, and I really appreciate how you're able to engage with both of us, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation many years to come.
Well, thank you so much, and it's my honor to have you both on and to be in your community. So again, thank you very much, and take care.